Many noted American modernists have successfully traversed the worlds of fine art and illustration, embracing innovation while satisfying in unique and personal ways the needs and wants of a broad popular audience. The Unknown Hopper, Edward Hopper as illustrator, is currently on display at the Norman Rockwell Museum in Stockbridge, Massachusetts through October 26th. The exhibition presents a unique and comprehensive study of the little-known 20-year illustration career of the realist master. Here to tell us more are Gail Levin, distinguished professor of art history, American studies, and women's studies at the Graduate Center and Baruch College of the City University of New York. Gail, thank you very much for joining us by telephone. I appreciate it.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And our dear friend Stephanie Plunkett joins us as well, chief curator at Norman Rockwell Museum. And it's a delight, as always, to have you in the studio, Stephanie.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Being here. So let us begin with you, Stephanie. This has been the big summer exhibit for the Norman Rockwell Museum. And my understanding is that in the a simple way of explaining this, in the art world, Hopper sells.
You know, you are right about that, because we have had such a great response to this exhibition. And I think, of course, it's because people love Edward Hopper's work. And of course, the wonderful surprise that they discover when they come to the museum is that not only did he have a distinguished career as a painter, but for his first 20 years as a professional artist, he worked as an illustrator, creating wonderful, beautiful graphic images for magazines of his day. So we are able to tell that story, and with thanks to Gail Levin, who did so much research on the subject, we were able to organize a very in-depth exhibition of his illustrations and help people look at the world in which he developed and some of the important artist associations that he had as well that helped him along the way.
Gail Levin, as we mentioned, is not only has a piece in the catalog, but is also Edward Hopper's biographer and the premier scholar of Hopper's work. And I'm interested, Gail, and when you look at these years of illustration, of how that fits into his artistic life, how should we look at that and put it into a context?
Well, the show at the Norman Rockwell Museum is a great place to see it, because Stephanie very brilliantly gathered around illustrations by his teachers and by his fellow art students. And you see that Hopper is very much a part of his day, of his time. And I think that many people know Hopper's images from the internet, and they forget how an artist at the beginning of the 20th century developed. And, you know, newspapers are being eclipsed now by the internet, as we all know. But in that day, instead of photographs in newspapers, there were artist reporters and illustrators. And Hopper's teachers for painting, even Robert Henri and John Sloan, they came from Philadelphia and out of that tradition of the artist reporter. Was very much a part of that realist tradition that Hopper inherited. So to really understand, even as some of Hopper's mature subjects, very unusual subjects in the history of art, like offices, it really helps to know that he picked up interest in that subject by having to do it as an illustrator for a business magazine called System. So that was actually kind of a precursor to Business Week magazine. So it's a side of Hopper that has really been forgotten, and he would have been quite happy if it stayed forgotten, I suppose, though he did save his illustrations. He didn't destroy them.
How much of the Hopper that we know do you believe that we can see in these illustrations?
Well, if you had never seen a mature Hopper painting, you might not see it in his illustrations, but if you're familiar with them, you'll see the seeds of his development. You know, even some of the very themes, a woman seated on a bed in a bedroom, it appears in some of the commissioned illustration work that he did. for magazines like Scribner's and Everybody's, popular magazines. So I think it's very important. Excuse me. Having allergies.
Yeah, it's 'tis the season. I'm sorry. You're suffering.
It's very important to realize how Hopper really took what he had to do, what he didn't want to do in commissioned illustrations, and used that experience. But the mind and the eye was already there. And Hopper himself said famously that, who an artist once is, he always is, that little changes from birth to death. And so for the person already familiar with Hopper, this exhibition is kind of a revelation if you hadn't known this aspect of Hopper. And it's a joy because you see how he developed.
And I think, Stephanie, what is just picking up on what Gail was just saying of that joy, the joy is that these individual works, whether you put it in context or not, are absolutely beautiful.
They really are. That he's, of course, a wonderful draftsman. And I think the spareness that he brings to his personal paintings is definitely there in his illustrations. He has a beautiful graphic sensibility. And some of the subjects, as Gail said, are completely interrelated. He loved to observe people in domestic interiors and cafes, the use of architectural elements. Those are all elements that we see across the board in both his personal and illustration work.
As you mentioned, Gail, he kept this work, and how did he look back on it? Was there any pride or something that we even saw in later sketches that were sort of reminiscent of that work?
Well, he pretty much covered it up. He didn't want to talk about it. And I think that has to do with the changing taste of the times. Illustration is not all he covered up. For example, he covered up the fact that he had studied with William Merritt Chase. Lloyd Goodrich, who wrote the first large book on Edward Hopper and who was first an art critic who discovered Hopper very early on and promoted him in a wonderful way with Goodrich's writings, never knew that Edward Hopper had studied with William Merritt Chase. And Hopper left behind an early calling card where he lists himself as a former pupil of Chase. So as taste changed, Hopper, like many artists, he wanted to stay au courant. He wanted to be with it. And so maybe the importance of American illustration took something of a dip. And now, of course, just the opposite is happening. Rockwell's work has been looked at again and revalued, people have a greater appreciation for it. I think a lot of this has to do with how wonderfully well both Edward Hopper and Norman Rockwell's realism or representation communicates to a very large audience. And then we have a vehicle like the Internet, so there's just a lot of availability of these images, and they have become extremely popular. Another thing I think that is interesting is that Hopper's learning through illustration to reduce unnecessary details, I think that really helped him make work which reproduces very well. And although he couldn't have anticipated the Internet, it's worked in his favor.
Let us talk for a moment, and I'd like to hear from both of you on this, but Stephanie, let's talk a little bit about Pretty Penny. This is a gorgeous painting, which ultimately was a commission done for Helen Hayes.
Yes, that's correct. It was actually a beautiful home in his hometown of Nyack. And in the 30s, when his career was on the upswing, there were challenging economic times, as we all know, and he was encouraged by his art dealer, Frank Wren, to take on the commission, and it was something he was not necessarily interested in doing. He didn't find inspiration in the home, and did take the job anyway. And, of course, Scale tells the wonderful story of his experience with Helen Hayes. Helen wanted to introduce some additional elements into the picture, like a dog and a figure. But Hopper really just treated it like a very straight commission portrait of the home.
Mm.
And ultimately, you know, he was paid for that commission, but it was not something that he was excited about doing, even though it's a very striking painting.
It is a striking painting, and Gail, it's probably the one thing that for audiences coming into the exhibit, look at it and say, okay, well, there's the thread of the Hopper that I have come to know as an artist.
Well, I don't think the painting is in the exhibition. I think it's still hanging in the Smith College Art Museum.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that painting, he was furious, both his wife, the artist Josephine Nivison Hopper, and his dealer nagged him to do it. And it's at the end of the Depression, when he was feeling the bite of the Great Depression a bit by 1939. And it was Helen Hayes' daughter and their poodle that he absolutely refused to put in. But for Hopper, it meant going up to Nyack, where he'd grown up, a town that was maybe too small to hold him. He didn't like the provincialism of Nyack. His sister lived in the family home. He didn't like his sister very much. So there were many, but he certainly didn't want to work on commission. And at this point, he was really quite successful. Despite the Great Depression, the early 30s, Hopper did very, very well. He was bought by the Whitney Museum and by the Metropolitan Museum and by the Museum of Modern Art. So having to paint something that didn't appeal to him really for him was just like having to produce a commissioned commercial illustration. It just wasn't his thing. And I did interview Helen Hayes in 1984 in a symposium that I organized at the Whitney, 1981,
mm-hmm.
Fall of 80, at the Whitney Museum in the 1980-81 show that I organized. And Helen Hayes was very funny. And she said that Hopper, this interview I later published, she said that Hopper, something like, I'm paraphrasing, was the grumpiest individual she ever met. And she had to kind of humor him because he was just really in a bad mood having to take on this. And, you know, he also refused. Fortune magazine tried to commission him to do some ocean liners or ships, and he as illustrations for their magazine. And Hopper had once said he had dreamed of becoming a naval architect even before he became an artist, but he turned that down. He did not. He had done that for the Morris Dry Dock Dial. He had done ships. He could do them easily. He liked to paint sailboats, but he did not want to work delivering what somebody else wanted.
What does that say? How did he feel? Do you think it was his own art, or do you think it was how he felt overall about illustration?
No, I think it was his own personality, that the creative force had to come from within, and he couldn't just turn it on at random. In fact, Hopper suffered enormously from painter's block, I like to call it, like writer's block,
sure. We
know that expression. And he and Joe used to drive around aimlessly. He felt he had painted all of Cape Cod. They couldn't find any more subjects there. That's where they had their summer home and spent really about half the year after 1934 when they built their home. So I don't really think that Hopper, he didn't consider himself an illustrator, but he recognized, for example, he did recognize that the illustrators for the Saturday Evening Post, for example, like Rockwell, were a cut above what he was doing. But he saw that Rockwell worked from photographs. He had tried photographs early on, and he didn't like working from photographs at all. So he was, on the one hand, dismissive. On the other hand, he had some respect for how well they did what they did. He just didn't want to do it. It wasn't something that was suitable to his creative process and his personality.
And how did that differ, Stephanie, from Rockwell?
Well, Rockwell always said, the great illustrators have shown us to ourselves, and I'm proud to be a part of that tradition. So he really saw himself as a visual storyteller. I think he loved the connection with his audience through mass publication. He received bags of fan mail. I think he really, at certain points in life, I think, struggled with the feeling that maybe he was old-fashioned, maybe he should be doing personal work, because, of course, this was in the atmosphere at that time. In the early 20th century, there really was a very clear distinction between artists who were doing art for commerce and those who were doing personal work. So Rockwell really, I think, embraced the field, came to really understand who he was, and I think through his life he did remain true to his idiom.
Was there ever a personal connection between the two?
Not as far as I'm aware, though Hopper did comment upon Norman Rockwell's work. He understood that Rockwell had used photography as reference. Rockwell worked as the great director, but he said his paintings look like they used photography. So he did have that kind of feeling.
And that was
about
dismissive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And was.
And by the way, Hopper did not want to be a great storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want to tell stories at all. He wanted to be mysterious and hint at a story, but he didn't want to tell it.
And
different.
How did he feel about the art world around him? Was he aware of it, or did he want to be very focused on his own work?
He was quite aware of the art world around him, so distressed by the rise of abstract and non-objective art that he was a major organizer of a journal called Realities in the 1950s, Reality in the 1950s, to combat the dominance of what he saw as the dominance of abstract art, both at the Museum of Modern Art, where he had had a retrospective, his first retrospective in 1933, and at the Whitney Museum, which was also showing abstract expressionism. And while abstract expressionists like de Kooning and Rothko made positive comments about Hopper, you know, once or twice in their lives, he had nothing good to say about anything abstract, and that includes Picasso. He just damned all of it.
Well, it's all very fascinating. It's the unknown Hopper, Edward Hopper, as illustrator, which will be on display at the Norman Rockwell Museum through October 26th. So last call in the museum on the exhibit, the unknown Hopper, for the next month and a half or so. October 26th, the unknown Hopper, on Saturday, September 20th at 5. You can explore the world of Hopper House, the historic home in NIAC, and what event will be going on?
We have a wonderful talk by Carol Perry, one of their directors, and that will be looking at how his youth years, his growing up years in NIAC, New York, and in the home in NIAC actually impacted his work and his thinking throughout his life. So that'll be exciting. And that's actually followed on the 27th by an actual trip that we are sponsoring.
A bus trip?
Yes, a bus trip to the Edward Hopper House in NIAC. We'll be doing a walking tour of the area and have a wonderful lunch, so we hope everybody will join us for that.
And it's nrm.org,
yes,
for more information, nrm.org. The unknown Hopper, Edward Hopper, as illustrator, will be on display at the Norman Rockwell Museum through October 26th. Gail Webben and Stephanie Plunkett, I thank you so much for joining us this morning. Always a delight. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.